Fear does not exist in this dojo. Pain does not exist in this dojo. We do not train to be merciful here. This is a place of learning. This is a place of knowledge. For years we've gotten from Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. And now it's time for us to get back.
It'll open up a way for us to talk about all kinds of martial arts movies. There's also like no way to not compare those instantly to Karate Kid.
Man, face you, he is your enemy, and the enemy deserves no mercy. We teach the way of the mic. Welcome to Dojo 9.
On this episode of Dojo 9, join the senseis Dave the Clone, Chris Stiles, and David Paulus.
When you watch The Mandalorian, eventually, one thing you're going to notice that speaks to what you just said is that it's the perfect example, in my opinion, just to put a bow on this sort of like, you know, not doing things gratuitously, but doing it for the integrity of the work. It's a perfect example. You want strong female characters done well. That's a masterclass. There's female characters, including Gina Carano and another woman. I forget her name offhand, but she's a female Mandalorian. There's a few female, you know, characters that are in these lead roles in these shows. And The Mandalorian's a great example. You want to see more of them. You don't roll your eyes and say, why the fuck are they doing this to me? Why am I watching this? They're well done. And that is ultimately what it comes down to. It's not what you say in life. It's how you say it. It's getting laid and getting a drink poured on your head.
Shit,
good
man.
Point. Good point.
I like it.
So I don't know if you guys, are there any other takes on sidekicks? Is there any way you see to revive this franchise?
There's a lot that would definitely take a hit from the sensitivity of today's audience. There's a lot that I'm surprised Mr. Piscopo hasn't gotten any cancel culture calling cards, like his appropriating Bruce Lee. Like, you know, you're supposed to get in a lot of shit for that these days. And
Johnny, he got baby oiled up for that shot at the end.
Oh my god,
you got greased up.
Dude, but how about, how about in the scene in the bus station when they're getting on the bus and the guy goes, can you tell that chink to put out the cigar or whatever? There's no smoking here.
Oh, and Charlie. Hey, Charlie.
And then he calls, and then I use that word in Best Thanksgiving. I thought it was hilarious. But you know, comedy celebrates the absurdity of the human condition. That's why you can say shit like that in a motion picture and get away with it, and that will prevail, because if it doesn't, cinema as we know it is completely dead. You have to be able to have the room to do that, because we're using real life examples of racism, xenophobia, sexism, and we're making fun of it, because if the audience sees how absurd it is sitting there together on a screen or on a couch, then that accomplishes the mission to say, wow, that fucking guy, how could he say that? And then the next thing you do, you walk out of your house or your apartment and you do the same thing in a different shape or form. But it's like, he calls the guy Charlie and my name is not Charlie. It's like, then the guy's on fire. But it's like, that's, you know, those things are funny because they're real things. There's people who say shit like that. Not making up shit and innuendos that don't exist, and people are like, oh, that's supposed to be funny. There's a difference between a shoulder shrug and a huff and a belly laugh, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did I bring up the xenophobic thing?
I don't know.
It's definitely something that, you know, you couldn't handle it the same way, right? You know, in 2020. Like, you would absolutely, that scene would be so different right now. And honestly, for good reasons, because the scene basically as it is right now is like, hey, like, let's introduce this character. Like, racism, y'all know that. And, like, here's the Looney Tune. Look at him, Looney Tune Miyagi, his way out of this. Like, he put the cigar in the guy's coat. Like, whoa. What's that guy's jacket? Yeah.
Do you guys realize that less than 1% of our population represent the activists who make all these issues mainstream about, like, the, you know, citing canceling films and things. There's literally a select few people. It's kind of like, you know, Islam and terrorists. There's, like, literally this group of idiots that fucking give a bad name to every, to a whole religious sect and people who are of that descent. And it's the same thing with this. It's like, entertainment should not have a governor. Yes, there should be limits. You can't make a Blazing Saddles remake today and expect for people to try to digest that, because there's no need for it. You have Blazing fucking Saddles to go watch three times a year on your own in the comfort of your own home to recognize again what that piece of work represents. You know what I mean? And there's literally just people who are professional activists. There are people like that today. I heard on a podcast recently. It's like, you know, guys who are like, they're male feminists who do it not because they believe in the cause. They do it because they want to be on the right side of the conversation when they're trying to get laid. And it's like, and that exists. Now, I do believe there are people who do it with true, pure intentions, and that's an admirable thing. But you could see through the shit.
Right on.
it is an interesting time, for sure. And
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, dude.
I was just going to say, you know, the part about the scene that doesn't work, because this is, it's a ripoff of the scene, first of all, from The Karate Kid, where they get, where they're coming back from the beach and Daniel's cold, he's in a towel, and the guys are drinking beer on Miyagi's truck, and they call him a pet word that I won't repeat. But, he fucking slices through the bottles, which is also beautiful foreshadowing for the trilogy that'll come into play in the second movie. But that's a great way of, like, okay, racism is a real thing. These guys will fuck with this little, you know, seemingly harmless little man, but he chopped through these bottles, and that's his way of being like, you don't want to fuck with me, motherfucker. And it worked, you know. The Looney Tunes aspect of this scene is the part that doesn't work, you know. If it was like anything other than Looney Tunes, it would probably have aged much better.
Yeah.
You know,
well, they don't ground the fact that he does the, like, 360 midair, that we also had the guy from Son-in-Law float in the Chinese restaurant also. There's going on throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, that's true. That is fucking fair. That is true.
But they don't ever, like, prep us for that. They don't give us any reason to accept that. And that's partly where I landed on this. This is like Karate Movie, the after school special. You know, some zany cartoon shit is going to happen because we're making this for, like, grade school through early high school so that we don't have to have the conversation we're having right now as parents with our kids. This is part of the time where TV was a babysitter, and like when both parents would be working and kids would be at home by themselves a lot more. So I think it's in that way a product of its time as well.
Yeah, you're right. Yep. Something only like three steps edgier than McGee and May. And if anyone out there knows what McGee and May is, then shout out.
Funny Martin Cove story, if I can indulge you guys for a moment, if you can indulge me for a moment.
Sure.
So 2008, my first year working at a really, really popular restaurant that had just opened up in L.A. And the whole model of this restaurant was it was celebrity driven. It was in conjunction with TMZ. Literally, if a star was coming to dinner, TMZ was directly informed so that they could be prepared, because they wanted the beast to continue to, you know, to grow in terms of, like, people seeing it all over America. And when they visit LA or New York or Miami, where they had these restaurants, they would go visit. One day, this guy comes in and he brings in with him Sensei Marty Cove. This guy walks in, I recognize him right away. A lot of the guys working, the kids working in the restaurant with me, don't know who he is. I'm the maitre d'. It's my job to know these things, but I'm also, like, well versed in film and pop culture enough to recognize some of these things. He comes in and I walk up to him and I say, you know, I'm a huge fan of yours. You know what I mean? It's like, it's such a pleasure to meet you. He somehow you know, he accepts the accolade and he's very grateful and gracious. And he says to me, you know, he says, yeah, I'm coming here tomorrow too. You know, I'll bring you a headshot and I'll sign it. And I'm like, I'm not, first of all, I'm not the kind of person that like looks for memorabilia like that, but I'm like, oh, no, you don't have to do that. He forces it on me. So the next day he shows up, and after this call, I'm going to send you, Maresca, a text message with a picture of this photograph. He all brings right. me an action shot from The Karate Kid, and it's in black and white, and he writes it to me, and I'll read. I quote, he goes, to David, remember, no mercy, great club, great food, best, but sweep the leg. Sensei Marty Cove.
Wow.
No, that's awesome.
I've got this picture framed in my closet because it finally collected enough dust. I just put it away. I'm like, what the? I was like, I can't get rid of it, but perfect. Well, especially it just came now, up today.
With Cobra Kai putting him in everybody's home now, you know, in all the living rooms that he wasn't in for a while.
It's incredible.
He seems like a really, really cool, genuine guy.
Dude, he's a legend in his own right.
He has been like such a huge boost to Cobra Kai, to the show, him coming back and just John Kreese is alive. It's like, you know, we got Darth Vader back, you know, we got like the Terminator back, you know, we got like, just something so amazing. And, you know, fuck, dude, that guy still looks like he's only like 52.
He's great in his commercials.
And he's a better looking, you know, non-52 than I am at 36.
And it's funny, I still come back to how little, as a kid, I put together that Piscopo was like a knockoff of him. You know, that he was the humorous comic book version of Kreese. Yeah. Whereas now I'm looking at it and instantly I was like, Jesus, they're not even trying to hide it. But
I mean, talk about, and, you know, also, you know, that's too much on a hot button issue. There's a lot of things in Joe Piscopo's dream sequence performances that would not age well at this stage either.
Yeah.
A lot of Looney Tunes depictions in there, and one of my favorite terrible ones is the guy who plays the villain, Cellini. He's in one of them as like a henchman, and it's just like, wow, I don't know, like everything about it is just like, whoo, that hair, that voice, that like face paint, that glitter, it's like, ooh. Cellini's definitely a piece of shit. But that is a far cry from the spandex skeleton suit.
And he was much more of a bully than Johnny ever really was. You know, like, he's full on, hey, you've got asthma? Fuck you. You can't breathe? Fuck you. That's so stupid. You're so fucking stupid because you can't breathe. And it's like, jeez, dude, are you serious?
Yeah, it was very over the top.
I will say the retconning of Johnny handing Daniel the trophy from the end of the first movie, saying you're all right, LaRusso. They kind of like pretend that never happened in Cobra Kai. You know,
is that official? Like, have they officially retconned that out? Or?
No. But just the way they cut everything together, they show like 84. And he's lying on that mat, and it's like flash forward to like him lying in bed. You know, and like symbolically, it's like, oh, he never got up off that mat. Where it's like, no, like he got right up and congratulated like LaRusso. You know, I get it. It's not like you don't need to see that at that point, but like, you know, they flash back to that moment a few times and they never show that part of it. But again, I get it. Maybe they will.
Maybe they will in season 4.
Maybe they will. Maybe fucking Victor Stone's going to show up. I don't think his name is Victor, but that's Cyborg's name. But,
I'll go with you.
Hey, check messenger.
But anyway, maybe Sensei Stone is going to show up, and maybe he'll be choking out Mike Barnes in a parking lot, and Kreese is going to show up and make Stone punch through glass. You never know. Anything can happen.
Incredible.
Maybe Hillary, Swank is going to show up, and is Julie Pierce from the next Karate Kid, and she's going to be like, I married this other karate guy, some Stone, you know.
Well, you know, can I pay a compliment real quick to Cobra Kai and just what they've done with that? Is that, listen, I am not as well versed with the series as you. I've seen enough to talk about it, okay, and that's why another reason I'm here. But it's such a beautiful example of what can be done if you want to embrace the past of something and you want to revive it for what it is. I mean, maybe Karate Kid, the saga or the series or the actual films, maybe they lent the possibility for Cobra Kai to be what it is just because all the groundwork was laid and it's beautiful. Because someone said in a boardroom, what if we looked at Johnny and Daniel LaRusso, where are they 30 years later or whatever it is? And it's like, it works because it has its integrity. And it's not trying to recreate something for the sake of nostalgia. It's embracing the characters and the inherent story and themes and advancing it. That's why it's so good.
And it's not stretching it out. It's not giving you filler episodes or crouton parts. It's not like, this whole season, nothing happened. It's just so the X could, A could get to B and C could get to D. No, it's made out of love. It's not made just to fucking make money. You know, when I saw Rogue One in theaters, I was like, why was this made? Like this was like just like a cash in, like the, and it was brutal too. Cause like there were shots in the trailer that weren't even in the movie where I was like, I went to see the movie. Like the thing that kind of won me over was this one shot in the trailer, which is the girl on the edge. Like, and it's just her and a fucking TIE fighter pulls up and it's like, looks giant to scale. And I'm like, wow, that's going to be a great scene. How does she get out of that? Like, and then that scene wasn't even the fucking movie. The climax of the movie was someone copying a hard drive. I never think because everyone fucking loves Rogue One, but I wanted to be controversial as well. But you know what? This is not that. This is made out of love. This is a fucking story that we all want to tell that is crucial to, this universe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why, again, that's why it's special and it works. And listen, even if there were episodes where nothing happened, those characters existing in their modern lives as depicted and as told in this series are compelling enough to be like, listen, you can get away with something like that when it's done correctly. And everything so far has been done correctly. It's like, you can't lose. But the second they start getting too cute with it and they start like, let's rip this off and that, then it doesn't work anymore. And then you're losing an audience and the interest isn't there. But, we all look back at our past, like when we were kids, look at the 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever. And it's like we're so preoccupied with like fashion and also nostalgic music and films and series and things. But this is an outlier because this should be a shining example of what you can do if you want to bring the past and make it new. Okay, you don't necessarily have to go to the thrift store. This is the way to do it. Take something out of your closet and reinvent it, but in a way that doesn't insult the audience.
Well, not to put you two on the spot there, Dave, but since you've got a movie and you've got like through your part of the machine now, you've got something that's out there, you've been involved with the Hollywood types, we could put it that way. If you were going to find something from your closet to kind of take this approach with to Cobra Kai, what comes to mind?
You know what? And this is where I would say this is where my limitations as an artist hit the wall or hit their ceiling because my mind doesn't, I live so much in the past from the standpoint that I say things like, I would want to see the original Peter Sellers Pink Panther films re-released in the theater, because I think they're viable and funny enough and good enough to be a valuable commodity today. Like, it would work. Like they're that good, in my opinion. But I could be completely fucking wrong. I mean, I like foie gras. That's fattened duck liver, for those who don't habla. And it's like, it's not for everyone. Yet I like it. But the point is like, these kinds of movies where you had like, what's his name? You know, anything with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. It's like, I feel like there's a generation, and actually I don't feel like, it is in fact, there is a generation that has no clue what gold exists in those 80s films, and some of them 70s and early 90s. And it's like, I see stuff like that, and I think there's a call to, you know, I'd hate to see them remade, because that's what happens when that happens. I feel the way about that as I do about what they did with Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Acknowledging again that one person here has seen it, and it's not me.
me neither.
But oh, to man, that point, it's like, there's so much, you know what I'd like to see? I just like to see opportunities for things like that to exist today. And that is having comedy without a governor, not having rules to be holding to that non-creatives are making, and not playing an algorithm. You know, a lot of it is like, you know, listen, there's reality stars that get to be leads in films. Why? Because they have a following. That's great business. It's horrible filmmaking. And that's, you know, that's, I don't think I answered your question, but
you know. No, you know, it's funny. Since you mentioned Gene Wilder, I was suddenly like, you know, what if they Cobra Kai'd something like Haunted Honeymoon? Oh my God, Haunted Honeymoon! Yeah, let me take two on that. What if they Cobra Kai'd Haunted Honeymoon and made like an entire universe around the characters that were part of that movie, and like the era of like radio stars before there was even TV? I mean, is something like that? Is there a way we could approach it with this kind of level of seriousness, but finding a way to make it approachable from today's audience? Or is the algorithm too in control?
You know what I think? I think to a degree, I put it like this, and Dave obviously knows our mutual friend, Gerard McMahon, also known as G-Tom Mac. When I worked with him, he did all the music for Best Thanksgiving Ever. And I'm not a musically inclined person. I appreciate music, but I'm not savvy with it. I'm not a music creator. And what I told him was, and this is how I'm answering your question, I don't know what it is, but I know what it isn't. And so that was, for example, he put a piece of music in, and if it didn't work, I'd say, yeah, we're not there yet. But when he put something in, and I'd start nodding my head, and I'd be like, wow, that works really well. But see, there it is. I didn't realize it, but there it is. Did any of us realize Cobra Kai was even a possibility? No. Somebody did it. Exactly. He did it. He did it. Somebody did it. And somebody did it. And it's out there in the world for us to consume, and we appreciate it, and it works. So I don't have the capacity to have ever thought up an idea like that. But now, what are we doing here with this conversation? We're like, oh wow, what could we do this with? Do another film series or something from the past. See,
now, I'll go the opposite way. I think about this shit all day. I have detailed plans in my mind on how to bring back Fright Night, Weekend at Bernie's, the old school live action Ninja Turtles, Wayne's World, Teen Wolf, everything, you know. I think about this shit all the time. And a lot of it I was thinking about before Cobra Kai. You know, I thought about Mighty Ducks for a long time, like how you would bring that back.
Now they're doing it. Supposedly it's on its way back, right?
It is. There was a new trailer. The first trailer wasn't very good. The second trailer, or maybe it was the same fucking trailer and just got reposted with the release date or something. But I don't know, something about it hit me a little bit more. I was like, maybe this will be good. Fucking, I don't know. Like, you know, because I want it to be great. I love the Mighty Ducks movies, you know. But bring all that shit back. Just do it right. Don't shit all over it. Don't make some crappy version of it, you know. If it's done,
and that's a perfect example of having success in a time and place. When Mighty Ducks came out, the NHL was on the Mount Rushmore of American sports. Hockey is a very niche
sport now.
A sport now for the fan base of you know, for consumership in the United States, especially because when they had their, and I'm a Detroit Red Wings fan coming from where I come from, we've been spoiled rotten, and we're still living on those past championships. I mean, I can go to YouTube and watch the last few seconds of a Stanley Cup win that they had, and still get like a forest of hairs standing up on the back of my neck, because it's that exhilarating. But it's like, that's when that was still in the mainstream. But like to reboot a Mighty Ducks now, I don't know, and I'm not an authority on this. This is strictly subjective. I don't know that it has enough of a fan base to captivate the audience or the, you know, public, except for, you know, hockey moms and those, you know, crazy, you know, hockey families that have their kids out of school at like age six to go do travel hockey. It's like, you know, I love the movie Slapshot. I mean, for example.
See, I tend to think that the movies kind of blazed the way for the pop culture. I think part of the reason that hockey went through such an explosion in the 90s was because of the Mighty Ducks movies. Got millions and millions and millions of kids like playing street hockey, playing roller hockey, playing what, you know, asking to get signed up for hockey. And the sad reality is that like hockey is a humongous investment. Like most parents, like even if they have the means, will be look at that and be like, you like, I know you suck at sports. Like you're not, I'm not wasting, I'm not throwing this money.
It's single-handedly the most expensive sport there is to play.
Oh yeah, totally. So
aside from like owning a horse or something.
That is at the heart of what makes, you know, Mighty Ducks good. But I think Mighty Ducks did for hockey what Karate Kid did for karate, you know, what the Rocky movies probably did for boxing was probably doing that. And the superstars helped. Mike Tyson didn't hurt the industry when he came up youngest champion ever and all that. You know, these things, you know, pop culture and superstars, they make a fucking big difference, you know. And now boxing can't compete because, A, the boxing movies aren't as good, although the Creed movies are actually very solid.
So there are movies that do what Cobra Kai did. You know what I mean? It's like this smooth transition. It's not a reboot. It's not a spinoff. It's a full-on, like a Breaking Bad anti-hero resurgence. I don't even know really.
But you're building on a pre-existing commodity. You're building on the success of Rocky. That's the beauty of Creed. I love the Creed movies because, A, you've got a fantastic actor in Michael B. Jordan. His love interest, Tessa Thompson, she's fantastic. And then you've got like what's her name? The Apollo Creed's widow.
Felicia Rashad, not the original.
She's great.
The boxing passing of the baton. Like, Michael B. Jordan is fantastic. Like his fight, like when you see him training, it's like, wow. And like the boxing is much more realistic in these movies than the Rocky movies. The Rocky movies, it's like right to the face, right to the face, right to the face, right to the face, right to the face. Yeah. No blocks. It's just like, wow.
But also stylistically, in a time and place, and this is where things get dated, the but 80s, they still can hold up.
To do it.
In a time and place, cinematically, it works.
Absolutely.
And like I said, I think Creed is a perfect example of if you want to, maybe reboot, but not say it's a reboot, you pass the baton and you had a lush, deep, beautiful pre-existing story. Apollo Creed's son. The fucking name on the posters is money. Creed.
Yeah.
What sounds better than that?
Yeah, it's very true. As long as you specify that it's not the band, you know, then you're fucking
right. Well, I think it's unless you're blind.
Up, right?
I'm sure that was some concern for someone in a board meeting, like, that Creed band.
And then everybody else in the boardroom, somebody pipes up and says, "Sir, have you seen Michael B. Jordan before?"
you're not going to confuse this guy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He destroyed the Utah Jazz in 1998, right?
Oh, shit. Exactly. So, was Sidekicks the origin for all the Chuck Norris's Invincible memes and stuff? before
I made that mention.
I don't know. You can't credit one movie for that. Chuck Norris has a body of work and facial hair that is to be respected. You know, we're talking Top Dog here. We're talking the Hitman. We're talking Delta fucking Force, Invasion USA.
Every time I think of Delta Force, or I remember Delta Force, the thing that always sticks in my mind is the product placement for macaroni and cheese. Because before he leaves his house, he's eating mac and cheese. That was his dinner, because, you know, a martial artist of the first rate that's also in great shape, that's what he eats. He's eating mac and cheese, and the fucking box is staring at the camera. You can't miss it. And I think I had a mac and cheese right after that.
That's how you get your beer luscious, by eating lots of mac and cheese.
Exactly.
But Sidekicks is part of the legend. You know, it's one of the part of the Laserdisc era of Chuck Norris, which is pretty much his entire active years of filmmaking.
Well, this is like concurrent with like Walker, Texas Ranger.
By the time DVD came out, Walker, Texas Ranger, I think, was like over, and he was doing Bowflex ads.
Bowflex.
And the thing is, and I said it in the beginning when I kind of gave my highlights or things that rang true, the thing that's prophetic about this film is not knowing anything about it and going into watching it. The fact that I had the advantage of living through modern times and celebrating and laughing in this tradition we have of all these endless memes people create of Chuck Norris memes, and that, you know, Chuck Norris is the solution for everything. You know, going back and revisiting something that predated this time and era that we're in, just it makes it so much more enjoyable to watch, because you're like, holy shit. They're like, this is a perfect example of why these memes exist today. But also, he had had enough of a career working with Bruce Lee, man, in the 70s. He had had enough of a career up to the point in 1992 when this film was made, to where this film, in a way, is kind of like a meme for Chuck Norris. Because when you say make fun of, it sounds like it's condescending. They celebrate Chuck Norris in this film by making humor of it. Yeah. That's maybe a more light way to say it, or maybe positive way or inviting way to say it. This film makes fun of Chuck Norris, but they celebrate Chuck Norris, and that's why it's so fucking funny. Because by this time in pop culture, he was already known as the guy in that regard.
That's true. Very true. It is definitely, you know, like I said, it's part of the Chuck Norris canon of, you know, canon of films. Everything he touched is legendary. You know, his floor is higher than most people's ceiling. So
you just did it right there. You just created a meme that probably already exists.
Yeah. Oh shit, that's awesome. Well, definitely, it's been a blast going down memory road with this movie. It makes me, you know, yearn for times long gone. And maybe we'll find a way to recapture that magic with some projects that we've all got on the horizon. And speaking of, David, the floor is yours. Is there anything that people should be on the watch out from you? What do you got going on, man? What's cranking?
Well, you know, and Dave knows this as well as anyone, Maresca, this, you know, Best Thanksgiving took quite a toll, because we shot it and it took 6 years to get it to market. No, it took 5 years to get it to market, where it's available now streaming Amazon Prime and purchase on YouTube and also Apple iTunes and things like that. But what I finally got in my bearings in the last, several months, and I am gunning towards scripting Best Christmas Ever. Why?
No shit.
Because it's just a good fucking title. That's why.
Dude, that's awesome.
So you know, and what we did with, you know, let me say this, and Dave likes Best Thanksgiving, and Chris, I don't know if you've seen it before, but here's what I would say about this. I said when I wrote the script, and I had help rewriting it to get it to where it was, the way we could produce it, I said this isn't the great American screenplay. But what it is it's an outlier in this regard. It's a comedy that doesn't forsake comedy for political correctness. It's like we go for the throat everywhere. But the beauty of the comedic genre is that we touch on racism. We touch on sexism, homophobia. We go all these really polarizing and emotionally charged themes that exist today. But they're done in a comedic sense, and ultimately every one of those instances comes back around and gets paid off in a way that I feel like is satisfying for the audience. And it's an example of a kind of film that doesn't get made today, but I want to continue that tradition with an opportunity to expound and maybe do it right from a commercial standpoint with Best Christmas Ever, because it's a genre people love. There aren't a lot of that's a bullshit. There weren't a lot of Thanksgiving comedies, so right. That's why I thought, like, okay, we have something here in that regard. There's a lot of Christmas comedies and romantic comedies and dramedies or whatever, but
yeah,
there's an opportunity. Exactly. And some of them are great.
Greats.
Yeah, some of them are great.
Yeah.
And at the same time, amazing, I think,
you know.
Yeah, and at the same time, I think, you know, the failings of, and I say failings relative, Best Thanksgiving is going to enjoy success in the long run. It's a 15-year contract with the distributor, and the more it's in the marketplace and the more consumership there is, it's good because people become familiar with it and it'll make its money. But Best Christmas Ever, the difference between this going into it and the one that I was in is that, you know, I put Jay Seals and David Paulus to play the proverbial Vince Vaughn and John Favreau in Swingers. Yeah. And they had a platform and a time and place that allowed them to have the success that they had. But what we did was we went the artistic model, not the commercial model. What does that mean, David? That means that the films that people go to see today, the only reason they go to see them is because names they've heard of are in them. It's not like it was when we were growing up. You'd go and see a film because it looked interesting and because it was playing when you happened to be standing in the theater. So yeah. This one, we're going to probably have to adhere to the commercial model, which is hopefully maintain the integrity of a good, fun comedy that doesn't insult the audience's intelligence. But at the same time, layer in, you know, the Vince Vaughn in place of David Paulus as Brad, as an example. And I always make parallels to Swingers because there are some parallels to that from a, you know, production cost standpoint and independent film standpoint.
So. I love Swingers. One of my favorite, you know, 90s movies ever. It's definitely, it's on the Mount Rushmore 90s films. You know, like if you can only take 10 movies with you, that's definitely movie right there.
You'll dig Best Thanksgiving ever then, man. It's
that sounds amazing, dude. Yeah, congratulations.
I'm not just saying that because David's on the show. I actually, when G told me to watch the movie, I was like, holy shit, this is hilarious. And then when I got to hang out with David, it was like, fuck, I know the guy who was in that and who wrote that and shit. That's fucking cool. So thank you so much, man, for coming out.
The beauty about writing a script like that and then you seeing the film and then getting to interact with me is you see a perfect example of what, listen, I'm good with dialogue. That's where my strong suit is. You want me to make you the fucking Pelican Brief or Michael Clayton or some shit like that, that the reason people to go see it is because it's like a ball of yarn and they have to pull it apart. That's not me. But it's the difference between having enough life experience to put your essence into, you know, a script. And that's what I was able to do. So what I think is funny, I'm betting on what I think is funny will be funny to other people. And you saw it that way. But then there's a lot of pencil pushers, and the world needs pencil pushers, but there's a lot of people who literally married the first woman they slept with. And those are the people writing you rated R comedies. You're not going to get good comedy out of that because they haven't experienced enough to be able to give you the kind of panache and the kind of, you know, toilet humor that is necessary. You need life experiences to be able to draw from and replicate them in a comedic form in a script.
Yeah, there's no way they're moving the chain. There's no way that's happening.
Chris, you'll know what that means when you see the movie.
Well, dude, if it works out, you got to bring me on for Best St. Patrick's Day Ever. Okay, for the part. Oh, part three.
I have a lot of.
If you keep saying shit like that, you're never going to get off this call because that's already an idea that's been thrown around.
Well, I got a lot of bartending stories from St. Patty's Day, so definitely at least give me a call for reference.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is called research.
Exactly.
You heard it here first. Oh, shit. Chris, what should we talk about? You got anything you want to talk about? Live action media? What's going on?
As always, you can catch my crazy movie poster mashups from the multiverse of madness. You can follow me on Facebook at Live Action Media or just my name at Chris Stiles. My picture is me in a peewee suit riding a bike. Every day I post a new silly movie poster mashup. Today's is The Princess Diaries with Princess Leia. So you get an idea what to expect. You know, things like Tina Turner and Hooch, Darth Maul, Rats, you know, just ridiculous. The worst mashups you can imagine. I've photoshopped them all. Other than that, you can catch me on YouTube at Live Action Media, Phantom Spotlight, New Jersey Horror Con, and hopefully much more often at Hollow Nine Network for your listening pleasure. And also doing some writing stuff, but too early to talk about. But stuff that Dave might get a little excited about later on. So the only person I can really tease right now is you, Dave.
My excitement is on the line for everybody's entertainment. So that's cool. Yeah, and obviously, you know, keep your eye on the Anchor FM feed. We've got Sketches of Madness. We've got more video cinema repair, a VCR shop. Coming your That's way. Right. That's helmed by Chris.
That's right. The Vintage Cinema Repair Special.
There it is. Vintage Cinema Repair. I clearly have a brain tumor or something. I don't know what the hell's going on. I might need to go get checked out after tonight's recording. We got more Dojo 9 on the way, and the alien invasion is actually going to start happening. So be prepared. The 6-part coverage of the Alien franchise is coming your way with a little bit of a flavor from the usual Hollow 9 sort of audio dramatic take on things. So thank you for putting up with a host who is clearly having a mental breakdown of some kind. And thank you guys for putting up with that and hanging out. And we'll be back with more awesome fan-made media on the Hollow Nine Network. Until then, strike first, strike hard, no mercy, and enjoy best Thanksgiving ever.
Sweep the leg.
Rewind those laser discs.
Add another brick. Breaking. We choose breaking.
Charlie.
On Thanksgiving, we all break bread. We choose bread.
Move the chain. Move the chain.
I got my first down.
I set it on fire just to break it.
That wasn't ready. You didn't say to be ready. You didn't say to be ready.
You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, INE. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, hollow9.com, where you can find info on all of our awesome programming as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback, join in the conversation, and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow Nine Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollow9.com or at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine! The New Jersey HorrorCon reputation is exploding. The atmosphere you guys had created. New Jersey HorrorCon was my entree into an actual horror convention.
Love it.
And you guys are doing a great job.
That is amazing. I'm super proud and super inspired to hear that. I mean, that's a testament to the community of cons and, you know, of horror and stuff in general.
My God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's Carmen Electra.
Hey.
Wow, we are all giving high fives to an absolute icon.
This is incredible.
Trailblazer, amazing. You are amazing.
Carmen Electra.
Absolutely. Be well. Safe. Thank you so much.
Love.
Have a good one. Be well. So you that's can't see happened. It on radio, but
oh,
she's
my
still
God.
Got
yes.
It.
That's absolutely.
My wife
still
right
got
it. My wife gets the picture of Carmen Electra.
The wife does. There you go, wife. Good job, wife. That's a keeper. That wife's a keeper.
Are you having a blast?
I am having a blast. Are you having a blast?
I am.
This place is awesome, right?
What's your most favorite part of the whole day so far?
When the guy dressed like Gene Simmons from Kiss stopped in front of our booth and we put Strutter on and he did a lip sync to the whole thing.
Guys, if you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and do that.
Yesterday I bumped into Michael Winslow. I got to have this whole experience where Leslie Easterbrook was lost and looking for her autograph table, and I got to take her all around.
It's spooky, actually. I'm going to turn the chair around a little bit so I can see you.
Oh, all right.
Keep an eye on you. I saw you and I thought, this guy knows everything.
Oh.
Terrific.
Oh, really?
And
oh.
sound in here with
cool.
you.
Thank
yeah.
you. Thank you. Yeah, it's
really
amazing
clear.
How it...
Damon Della Greca of Slasher, this awesome app.
I wanted to do something that would really make it for these people who just love to create, who love horror.
Thank you for what you're doing, dude. It's
Thank
great
you.
That you put this together.
Absolutely, man. It's always good to see you.
We're trying to have as much fun, and we want people to have fun with us, and that's why we got guys like you stop by the table, hang out. We got to do the radio thing for a little bit.
He's from Jersey. I'm from the South, so.
And I'm from the Bronx, so.
So we're all still okay. friends. That's good.
So we're all good. Daniel Frankenstein. I'm representing psychothematicmedia.com. Call ourselves a creative collective.
My name is Gail Bykowitz.
Yeah, I'm Hector De La Rosa. We're partners in crime here. We're doing special effects makeup, and we're also independent filmmakers.
When I ran into them earlier, they were definitely vampire cowboys.
I love Better Off Dead. I love Dylan's Heads. And I'm just so glad that you guys remember
those
films.
Oh my God. Those movies, I would go to school and just try and talk like Bill and Ted all day.
Those
like,
triumphant
times. I want
to
go
back
to my $2, man.
Right?
I have walked around wanting those $2 for how many years now?
This is fantastic.
We need some language lessons.
David Clone from the Hollow Knight Network, and by now you know what it's time for you to do. Let's go on over to NewJerseyHorrorCon.com, get yourself some tickets, and check out this awesome event where we are lifetime sponsors. We will be there from now until infinitum with all these incredible guests that are going to be at the next one, bringing you all the awesome from the show floor right to your digital door, right here at Hollow9.com at the New Jersey Horror Con and Film Festival.
Did you get it? I hope you got it.
I got it.
That's good. See you soon.
I don't know if you think making me repeat myself is going to somehow make the story change, or if you just don't want to hear what it is I actually have to say, but again, we changed course based on orders received on the flash ban from company headquarters. Code Gold, command eyes only. Standard operating procedure, as I know you are aware. Search and rescue would rarely venture into an unregulated area without more concrete proof of life. We sure found something out there, all right.
When you watch it as a little kid, you know, it's a monster movie, it's creepy, but then there's all the weird artificial intelligence stuff, there's the, like, rapey nature of the facehuggers and all that.
Why don't you stick your face in the egg, dude? Is there an egg opening in front of you? Stick your face in there and see what happens.
When I fall asleep at night, I have this irrational fear that something is going to crawl inside and, like, lay eggs inside of me. I'm actually wondering, now that we're talking about this, if this might have been the impetus for that.
You know, Star Wars comes out, and they go, what other movies do we have set in space? Boom, Alien gets green light the next day.
Very similar to just even how our government is in preparation for something where they didn't know exactly what was in store, like specifically xenomorphs.
Bodily fluids, and it's not just blood. There's a lot of, like, grease, and there's a lot of sweat. And if it wasn't the blood that got me, it was the sheer amount of sweat.
We're on a mission to bring back knowledge of the xenomorph.
The end of all mankind, all wrapped up in a bow, just waiting for us to come along. You're gonna find yourself staring down the barrel of a living, breathing devil in the flesh that bleeds acid and lives to kill us.